you're walking through Wegmans and you hear people talking about, I bought Bitcoin. I can't help. I overhear all that stuff. But there was a kid talking about it. And I think I mentioned this in a different episode of a podcast about how he bought this and he sold it off at a gain, but he made 140%, but then he sold it off and he invested it in AMC at the time or something. And then it dropped, but I get to write off the losses. So it's not a big deal. That's not the way it works. There's a short-term capital gain now that he has to pay taxes on. And this is jargon on purpose, Ben. This is, again, what people just don't know what they don't know. There's a short-term capital gain of, I'll make this up, $40,000. He then lost it all and now can only write off $3,000 of the loss. He's going to get a real surprise next April. I almost wanted to stop him, like standing by the marshmallows at Wegmans and say, hey, man, listen, you're going to have a big tax bill. Be prepared.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Baubert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. I am here with David Polsini of Six Point Financial Partners. David, what's up, man? How are you today?
I'm doing great, Ben. Sunny day. Happy to be alive. I'm here with you and excited to talk.
Dude, this is going to be fun. You are the managing partner at Six Point. You're also the host of Dear Rochester Retire Well, a really just kick butt podcast in the Rochester area. And anyone who's listening to the audio, check out the video version of these podcasts because I intentionally used a green screen, which is like my dream retirement home. Because at the end of the day, we all want to retire well, right? Have you ever met someone who doesn't care about their retirement?
Ben, I've seen it all, man. And the answer is actually yes.
As I asked that, I'm thinking there's probably those outliers.
And you know what it is? I'll give you an easy example. I just met with a guy. I'm not going to make it past 62, Ben. No one in my family has ever made it past 62. Why do I need to plan for retirement? Good luck trying to do retirement planning for a guy like that. And that's fine. I've also met people that said they weren't going to make it past a certain age. And here we are 20 years later and they're still around. So I bet you they wish they could turn back the clock and do some retirement planning. But yeah. Yes, I have been. I don't know if you expected that, but I think I've seen it all at this point.
Well, I mean, you are the host of Dear Rochester Retire Well, so you are the pro on retirement planning and everything financial. The one thing I noticed most recently was you're doing like a 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s series. My question on that, and it was what, like six re? What's the, there's like six reasons? Tell me a little bit about the series because people are going to want to go listen to that too.
Well, in the podcast in general, I'm trying to cover the topics, first of all, that I would want to hear. And believe me, I know financial planning, you get into the stuff, it can be pretty boring. So try to make it entertaining, try to keep it around 20, 25 minutes. Sometimes we go way over. But the purpose of the series on the age groups was to really encompass everybody. I mean, typically, if you have somebody listening to a podcast, the first one was in their 20s and 30s. The second one was in their 40s. Second one was 50s, 60s. We have a 70s that hasn't come out yet as of this recording. Then I'm going to stop there because I don't know how many listeners we have in our 80s. But I do have people ask me, like, Dave, why are you sending me the podcast? I'm in my 30s. Why are you sending me the 60s episode? And I said, well, Ben, for example, if you're in your 30s, now you know what we do for people in their 60s, or your parents may be in their 60s, or your aunts and uncles may be in this, so you can forward it on to them. So I wanted to make it so it really included everybody, the major milestones. We had some great guests on speaking about different the different age groups. And then really, just as an easy outline, honestly, I just did the six things. We could have done 20 things. We could have done 100. We could have done two. But six things seems to fit and fits for branding too, right? Six things we tell people in their 40s, whatever, by Six Point Financial Partners.
Oh, so, yeah. Six things by Six Point. I actually really love that. And I'm wondering, because I don't want to get in all six things of all levels because people don't really want the minutiae anyways. No. But are there general themes? Like, is there baseline things that whether I'm in my 20s, 30s, 40s, my listeners are everything from 18 to 70, I imagine. Mm-hmm. So is there any milestone, foundational things that everyone, whether they're in their 20s or 70s, should be focusing on for their financial wellness and just knowing that they're going to retire well one day?
Yeah. Well, if you're talking retirement, it may be different than I'm saving for a house, right? But the common theme really is, and I say this a lot, how much money do you need and where is it going to come from? So that could be any goal, right? It could be retirement, could be buying the house that you have in the background, your dream retirement home. It could be, again, anything, but how much money do you need? Where is it going to come from? And then let's be efficient with it. Right now, what I would say, if I have one piece of advice, is I see so many people with a lot of pre-tax savings, right? And again, I won't get into this too much, but this applies at every age group. I think every person that came on, each guest talked about the same thing. Hmm. If we can get into after-tax investments, Roths, the reason for that is tax rates in general are probably going to go up. We're in a very low tax rate environment right now. Historically, the government's spending a lot of money on different things. We're coming out of a pandemic, hopefully. And because of that, the easiest way for the government to generate revenue is to raise our tax bracket. So if everybody's money is all in pre-tax accounts and then you need some money, well, your portfolio just took a huge hit because of no fault of your own. They just raised tax rates. So that has nothing to do with the market, anything else, any of that boring stuff. What it has to do with is just diversifying your actual savings. And that was across all levels. And that can affect people in their 20s, typically because they're making a little bit less money than they will in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And it affects people in their 70s because after-tax money, in a lot of cases, doesn't count against Social Security. There's no required minimum distributions when you're 72. And all sorts of stuff. You told me not to get into the minutia, but there I go. So I'm gonna stop there. I could do this all day.
and that's the key here. I got lost a little bit, David, and I'm sure some people did. And that's why it's good to have somebody who actually knows what they're doing. But so there's people like me, right? Mm-hmm. I've got a bunch of ETFs. I've got a portfolio. I look at crypto a little bit. I don't gamble with crypto, but you know, I understand this stuff. Do I need a financial advisor? Does everyone need a financial advisor? Is there people that, you know, can just get off on their own, or does everyone need an advisor in their life?
It's funny you asked that, Ben. So in the episode in the 60s, I had our guest was actually Alex Neary, who's one of our own at Six Point.
Yeah.
And I asked him that same question, and he said, it was surprised me because I thought for sure he'd say yes, we're financial advisors. He actually turned it and said, no, everybody does not need a financial advisor. If you think you can do all of this stuff on your own, go ahead. What I would say is 99.999% of people should have some sort of help, because there's no way you can answer everything, or even it's the old, you don't know what you don't know, right? Like, how much money is it before you reach the next tax bracket? And what can we do about that? What type of savings should we use? Are your investments perfectly aligned with your goal? Ben, is your will and your healthcare proxy and your powers of attorney, are those up to date? What attorney are you hooked up with? What taxes? Yeah, and like I could give you, I did episode 8 on our podcast. Mm-hmm. There's probably one of my favorite ones still, even though I was still new in the podcast world, right? And you always get better. I never want to hear my first episode ever. So yeah. I'm glad like 4 people listened to it, and hopefully they didn't go back from the new episodes to that one. But episode 8 was, I was skiing with my daughter at Bristol, and I overheard the table next to us talking about financial planning. And some guy basically said, why do you have a financial advisor? You can just do it yourself. And I couldn't help myself, because I'm always, maybe this is a fault of my own, I'm always on. I just started writing down questions that I know that there's no way this guy could answer. So in episode eight of our podcast, I said, how far can you make it? So question one is, do you have your healthcare proxies, powers of attorneys, your will up to date? Now, a financial advisor doesn't do that, but they work with professionals that do, and those attorneys, and they can send you to the proper attorney that is a good fit for you. Most people can't make it past that one question. If they can, believe me, I had 17 more that there's almost no chance somebody can make it through. And I said, how far can you get? We had a number of people reach out in the hundreds, and the furthest one that somebody got was question number 5. So what I would say is, listen to that episode. And if you can't answer those questions and you think it's worth your time, listen to that and then decide if you need a financial advisor. I think a big thing for us, Ben, is people don't know, again, what they don't know. And it's like, they either don't want to deal with it, or how do they even know who to trust? Right? Like, I can Google financial advisor and I call the guy down the road. It's like, I don't know anything about him, which is actually, just so you know, the purpose of our podcast. Like, people can listen to this and then they can decide if they want to work with us or not. And I'm not being a pushy sales financial advisor that gives our industry a bad name. Then they can listen to me and see our stuff and our content. It's 2021. It's not like when I started, when I was knocking on doors, right? So yeah, you guys listen to it on your own time. And if you like it, reach out. If you don't, that's fine too. That's what I tell people. So it's been great.
So you started knocking on doors. I'm thinking to myself, so I know high school, pretty much my whole life until recently, financial wellness was not really a conversation. They didn't teach it to me, at least not in depth in high school or even much in college. It might have had to do with my major. Tell us your timeline and your trajectory. What got you into, you know, the financial world that you were so passionate about it that you were willing to knock on doors to talk about it? You know, how long have you been in the field? Where'd you get your start? And what keeps you chipper? Like, why do you love this industry so much?
So I don't have the typical why story. So most advisors have, like, my grandparents were completely poor and my family had to help out, and I never wanted to see somebody like that. Or my cousin won the lottery and spent all of their money, and I don't want to see that happen to other people. Or it could be a million different things. I went to school for engineering and then graduated, switched at the last year to business and marketing at Hilbert College in Buffalo. And my now wife, who's my girlfriend at the time, was interning at a financial services office. And she literally said, and I'm gonna say one swear word on this because this is typically not me, Ben, but my wife said to me, you should go work at this financial company. They make a shit ton of money and they don't do anything. And I said, I'm 21 years old, I'm in. So I went and interviewed. I won't pick on the hiring process at typical financial companies, but they'll hire anybody, Ben. You could go get a job. I can get you a job in about 14 minutes if we walk down the street and you have an interview at a company. So I interviewed, I got the job, and it was a sales job. I don't even want to pretend. Now looking back, it was a sales job. It wasn't financial planning. It was, how many people can you get into this type of account? That's fine. It was a game. It was a sales game. It was all numbers. For the listeners out there, that is kind of what gives financial planners a bad name, right? They're knocking on the door. They're saying, behind the scenes, just so you know, they're saying, oh, I talked to 42 people. 30 of them said yes to an appointment. 10 of them showed up at the meeting. 4 of them go to a second meeting. 3 of them closed. That should not be financial planning. Financial planning is, are we a good fit? And I can get into this later. But so Ben, I started doing that and I started working in school districts. So the company that I worked with had a team that had a niche market, which was awesome, by the way, for a 22-year-old to walk in and talk to teachers and administrators and staff about their 403b accounts. Because listen, back then I looked like I was 12 years old. It's like, who's going to give me their life savings? But if I could go to a school and knock on the teachers, when I say knock on doors, I'm not talking about walking up driveways. There are companies that do that. I was in school districts knocking on doors. I was in the staff lounge with flyers and saying, hey, I help with the 403b accounts in your New York State pension. I was going like classroom to classroom at schools, which I can't even imagine doing in today's environment. But I would just say, hey, Ben, I was just down the hall meeting with Steve. I wanted to stop by and introduce myself. I'm here all the time. You probably see me. I'm in the suit. Hey, has anyone helped you with your 403b? Do you have any questions about your pension? And we just went through and we set up thousands of 403b accounts. So going back to your question on the why, my why didn't develop until after I set up probably a few hundred people, to be honest. And then I saw, like, I don't want to say it this way because I'm not being discouraging and we were there to help, but like the dire situation they're in. If you're 52 years old and you have $700,000 in debt in mortgages and credit cards and other things, and we're just starting a retirement account at $25 a paycheck, that's a problem. So late, my why became to, like, help those people, especially in our local community, right? So I kind of grew into my why, to answer your question. It definitely did not start that way. And by the way, going back to what my now wife told me, I did not make a lot of money And I worked way too hard. It was actually the complete opposite of what she told me. I think I worked like 80 to 90 hours a week and I made $12,000 my first year. So that's the typical financial planning trajectory. And then it takes off if you do the right thing and you take care of people.
Now, what do you guys do different at Six Point? Less of a sales-driven structure, better offerings. Like, well, what's the big difference here between Six Point and a company like your previous one?
Wow, Ben, I could talk about this for hours. So the first one is, and you guys hear this, and I don't want to be cliche, but when you're an independent firm, you don't have to sell stuff. So what does that mean to a listener, your listeners, Ben? Or like, if I'm meeting with Ben on December 28th and I'm short of my sales goal at a company, and if I get Ben to do a certain life insurance or a certain type of account, I'm going to get paid a lot more. I'm going to win a branch trip. And there's a huge conflict of interest, right? So I'm meeting with Ben. My entire goal may be to get Ben to write me a check or transfer those funds on the spot, whether it's right for Ben or not. That's up to them to decide. That just doesn't exist in our world now. We don't have any sales goals or pressure. It's all about the client. And when we say that it's all about the client, that's what we mean. It's like, we're not forcing anybody into anything. And it's really taking an objective look at what they have and how can we help them. And by the way, if we can't help them now, we'll send them to either somebody that can or they can't be helped, right? There's no pressure on me trying to close something. And with that said, that's where another difference in our firm is the things we're able to do. At my previous firm, and I'm not picking on anybody, and most firms are like this, I couldn't do a podcast. I couldn't do white papers. I can't do videos on YouTube. I can't send my clients videos on a monthly basis. I'd make our own service calendar at Six Point. So we've developed processes, systems, all of that content. Again, all of those other things I talked about as client outreach and marketing that I could have never done before. And I knew that I couldn't do that where I was. And that was a catalyst for us making a move a little over 3 years ago now. And it's been great since then. And by the way, the companies that don't allow the podcast, that's insane. Like the results that come from just getting your voice out there and people getting to know you rather than cold sales. And again, all of that stuff, Ben, you're a marketing person. They can consume it on their own time. I'm not being pushy. I can tell when people, sometimes I can tell, so this isn't creepy, but like on a Saturday night, if someone's listening to the podcast, you can see the number goes up if you log in and check it, which, by the way, I've never really cared about. If I have a million listeners and nobody does anything, I don't care. I'd rather have 100 listeners that fully engage and they're, I don't want to say they're fans, but they actually listen to the free advice and content. So I hope that describes the difference a little bit. The conflicts of interest and the stuff I'm able to do now translates directly to a client meeting.
Yeah, it's, I love that you're talking about the podcast and the engagement, and really you're just a person with advice and they can get to know you. You're not there to sell them. You're not there to pitch them. It was actually a semi-awkward conversation. I'm in a sales mentorship group and we were doing this thing, you know, rate your ability to close from F to A. And it came to me and I'm like, you're asking the wrong person because I don't close. Like, I don't want to close somebody. If they're not a good fit, I'm not going to close them. And if I can't help them, I don't want to work with them. I want it to be mutually beneficial. So more of what I like to do is educate. I like to network. I like to provide value. And if there's a mutually beneficial opportunity, then we make a mutually beneficial decision to work together. And that's one thing that the podcast is great to just introduce yourself, introduce the knowledge, introduce your company without having to be a pushy salesperson or force someone into something that might not be a good long-term fit for them. So
yeah,
I love nerding out about podcasts, man.
Oh, totally. And it, you know what? It's anybody new that we've met with, and this is for all the advisors in the firm. So when I say that I'm the managing partner of the firm, really what I provide is podcasts and other content and other things and ideas and mentorship. I've been around for a little while, so I hope they appreciate my ideas, but I haven't had anybody come in that doesn't feel like they already know me. So even Ben, if you were my client and you said, hey, I want you to talk to my friend, Mike, I'd say, okay, what's Mike's email? Or Mike can book an appointment online. once he does that, he's going to get our intro podcast. He's going to get an introductory video. He's going to get a piece on our process, and he's going to get the 10 questions you should ask a financial advisor. By the time all of that's done and Mike comes in to meet with us, or we meet virtually, whatever it is, in the last 2 years, almost everybody that's come in says, Dave, I already feel like I know you. I'm ready to go. Just tell me what I have to do. Because I've listened to everything. And that is so much better of a way to do business than the old closing ratios, right? So it's the same thing. I don't close anyone. It's like they're either ready or they're open and willing because they've seen our stuff, which is so nice.
I like the 10 questions to ask a financial advisor, mm-hmm. because you're handing someone a cheat sheet guidebook to empower them to ask the right kind of questions. My assumption is you guys know how to answer those questions.
I was going to say that. Totally. Listen, you take that too. I've had an advisor actually call me and leave me a voicemail. It was funny. An advisor from another firm. And he's like, he said a bad word to me, but he was joking. And he's like, man, you're a jerk. He didn't say jerk. He says, Dave, what is this list? You're a jerk. Call me back. And I was like, this is awesome. I got to call him back. So he had no preparation. So absolutely, if an advisor hands you a list of 10 questions, they better have an answer on how they should answer it. How they can back that up, though. You ready for this, Ben? This is going to make some people mad. Mm-hmm. Some advisors mad. Ask your advisor for their own credit report and their own written financial plan and their own investment statements. I have absolutely no problem showing people exactly what I invest in myself and my own plan and my own credit report. And Dave, I'm sure my clients with $20 million will say, well, whatever, man. And my clients that are trying to work up to that $20 million will say, Dave, how did you do that? So that's real evidence and backup. You can't fake that. Now, it's easy for me to say. If somebody said that to me when I was 22 years old, I have no credit report or investments or anything. So I understand as a new advisor, they're not going to be able to show that, right? But that's a true test. If they can answer those 10 questions and then follow it up with what I just said, there's really no hiding from that.
Now, obviously, we can listen to, there's a whole podcast episode on the 10 questions, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
So we can listen to that, but what are a couple of the questions? Are there any key ones that I should, without a doubt, out of the top 10, is there a top three I should be asking my advisor?
Yeah, I can do a few of them very quickly. The first one is, how long have you been in this business? There's no substitute for experience. Or if somebody's brand new in the business, I hope they have a senior partner that has a process and a system in place. Second is, how long are you going to be in the business? This is where people don't think about this. Is most financial people that they think of that know what they're doing, and everybody knows this. Who's a successful financial advisor that's sitting at the country club all day long? He's 55, 60, 65 years old. You're 35, you're looking for a financial advisor. How long is that person going to be around? Are they going to be able to take you to your retirement and through your retirement, or do they have a team in place that can take you? So how long have you been an advisor? How long are you going to be an advisor? I'll skip to there. I love them all, Ben, but one of my favorites right now, just because I've been talking about this a lot, is, do you have any incentive to put me in one thing over another? And we've already mentioned that a little bit. Now, there are ways that they can answer that would be confusing. And again, this is where it's hard to vet financial advisors truthfully. You just really have to look at the company they're working at. And does your company make you sell stuff to get benefits? Like, Ben, again, if I'm meeting with you at the end of December and I need to put you in a certain account for my family to get health insurance, what do you think I'm going to try to do? So if I'm honest about it and I say there's an incentive, dude, I don't know how, if I'm a client and I've made it that far and say, do you have any incentive? What if I said, yes, I do have an incentive? That's where it's like, what do I do? If I'm the client, what do I say?
Right.
What I would say is, don't sign anything and tell them you need to think about it. But that is one of my favorites. Do you have any incentives to recommend one thing over another, along with experience?
That's huge. That's huge. I feel like we're unveiling some hidden truths here.
Yeah.
I want to know, because I want to be empowered, and most people know they need a financial advisor. They have the toolkit. They know what to ask now. They can get the resources, but they're do-it-yourself kind of people. Are there certain things that I should be doing personally on my own time to empower my own family, empower my own personal finances, and not really just have to, I don't need David to hold my hand on every step of the way? Is there certain things that I can be doing myself?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. It's constant reading, listening to podcasts, other things. I mean, you remember, you're asking a guy that does this full time, 24 hours a day. So it's like, I don't know how anybody could, and I'm not just saying this, I don't know how anybody can keep up with that. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wants to do it themselves, there's certainly outlines and projects that you could work on. Or, but I mean, in this example, Ben, if you were asking seriously, I would say, get a hold of me. I'll send you the 6 points. That's where the name came from, by the way. If you can master all of these 6 points and then implement it into your own plan, you probably will be okay. It's just a ton of work. And that's where people offload it, right? That's why many times they want an advisor and sometimes they want to try it themselves. But there's simple outlines for financial plans, starting with budget, cash flow, investments, and other things. But yeah, you could certainly do it. It'd be difficult. And again, it's just you're going to run into things you don't know.
And I'm not saying that I should do it on my own, but is there a certain amount that I should be allocating? Is there... Mm-hmm. Should I stop, you know, eating fancy food? Should I travel less? Should I travel more? What personally, and I know you had Jesse Kramer on your show. I've had him on my show, and he's great because he tells on the Best Interest blog. Again, people, listen to the Jesse Kramer episode of Rochester Business Connections. I know he was on your show as well, yep. But at Best Interest blog, he talks about his own personal experience on getting out of debt. And I just love hearing those personal stories. Is there anything that you personally do that, whether it's saving a certain amount of money, do you donate a certain amount of money? Do you have a system in your personal life that you follow?
Totally. And remember this, Ben, I'm in the unique position of I've seen hundreds of people succeed
right,
and hundreds of people not succeed. So it's easy for me to copy those people that have succeeded. So when I'm 22 years old and I'm working with somebody with $3 million, it's like, well, what did they do? Let's take some lessons from that for my own personal life, but also help them get organized. First thing is getting organized. I'm extremely organized. Our own financials and all of our clients, by the way, if they're willing to put in a little work, I should say. There's still some clients out there that are like, we'll get to that next time. But I try to get everything on one page. And it's funny, if you saw it, it looks like little stick figures. And if there's any advisors out there listening, it's a program called Asset Map. And I use Asset Map to keep my clients organized. And it looks a little, it almost looks amateur, but I'll tell you, there are people with millions of dollars and people with hundreds of dollars that say this is the most helpful thing, especially for a spouse or significant other that's not as involved in the finances. So Ben, it would have you as a stick figure in the middle. And then on the top of
literally,
it,
literally a stick figure.
Yeah, I think it's like 3D now. It's a little more 3D now, but cool. We can make it any color you want. It shows your income off of one side, right? So cash flow. And then on the other side, we have different retirement accounts. Above it, it would say who's Ben's CPA, who's Ben's property and casualty insurance with, like homeowners and auto insurance. Who is that person? And I'll tell you why I get all of this in a second. Also, who's the estate planning attorney? Okay, underneath it, it would say, where's Ben's house? How much is it worth? Where's Ben? Does Ben have a mortgage? Mm-hmm. How much does he owe on his mortgage? And then also any other investments. So some people on their map, they have 42 different accounts. Some people have three. Right. So the first step is to get everything on one page and get organized. Then we can say, what should we consolidate? What should we not consolidate? Let's redirect money, Ben, to answer your question. Should I keep putting it into this or should I put it into this account? Again, most of the time it's the pre-tax, after-tax thing. But step one, right? 3 to 6 months of emergency savings. No doubt about it. Let's get that and then move on to these other boxes. So you can see when all those boxes are on one page, that's when. And I've recently had this, a multi-million dollar client who's happened to be the husband was more involved in the finances. And the wife was like, I don't even know what account you guys are talking about anymore. So I put this on a page and I was like, this is the one we're talking about. And she loved it. So happy. And we make it easy. But my own stuff, Ben, you get it organized. I show my wife, she's involved in it, but also systematic savings, and you've heard this so many times, is absolutely the key. No doubt about it. And time. And I know that 25 to 40 year old entrepreneurs don't want to hear that, but systematic savings and time in and being smart, right? So my own stuff, I started off at whatever I could afford in my 401k. You just slowly chip away and continue to increase. put it in your calendar. If you're not working with an advisor that's doing this, either find an advisor that's doing it or do it yourself. Put it in your calendar on July 1st, Ben. Increase retirement contributions. And then maybe you make it happen, maybe you don't, but at least it's on the top of your mind, right? Once a year, increase retirement savings or whenever your raise is. So if you're a teacher and you get a raise in September, put a note in there. Increase 403b contributions if your advisor is not helping you do that. And eventually you get to the point where you're saving, and I'm not making this up, thousands. If you start when you're 22 and chip away, and I'll be 41 actually next week. You start chipping away at it. All of a sudden you're saving thousands of dollars per month and you didn't even realize it was happening because you're still kind of living the way that you were. The pushback that believe me, I understand is, well, Dave, I don't want to live like I was.
Right.
I want to buy that cool car and that house, or I want to move, or I had kids. There's always an excuse. That is why the systematic savings is key, and then forget it exists. So, Ben, I've gone from, and I'll tell anybody anything, I've gone from like saving the bare minimum to get the match out of the 401k to high thousands of dollars a month into different accounts. And you truly don't notice it. And as a if you're a business owner, as that grows, just systematically saving, and just keep on doing it and forget it's there. If that makes sense.
So stay organized, keep it simple, systematically save. By doing this, it's easy to talk to your significant other, your family, and have a good grasp yourself of what's going on. Any major struggles that people seem to run into? Any like huge struggles you ran into or a client? Anything that I should look out for?
Yeah. A big one immediately, and I've been through this three times. Makes me sound old. I'm going to be 41, Ben.
Yeah, you're young.
It sounds like I've been through like 15 down markets, but it makes me sound old. But I've seen it a number of times. The biggest mistake I see, and it's again cliche, is people changing their investments when the market goes down, or not contributing anymore. Or I've had a number of people on episode 15. We had Matt Drummond on the podcast. He's a national 403b. I don't want to say figurehead, but he's up there. And we had a story that he asked the same question. One of the examples was he had a client that had $250,000 in an account in 2008. The market crashed. It went down to $150,000. She moved it all into a guaranteed account. If she had just left it alone, she would have millions right now. But now she moved into a guaranteed account earning 1%. Then she captured her loss. So especially for younger folks, or if you're invested properly, don't panic. Try not to even, I know this sounds funny, especially for people that are logging in every day and looking, try not to look at it. Don't panic. That's when bad moves are made. And then even when you make good moves, I've had, and you know this, Ben, I've heard people, you brought up crypto. You're walking through Wegmans and you hear people talking about, I bought Bitcoin. I can't help. I overhear all that stuff.
Yeah.
But there was a kid talking about it. And I think I mentioned this in a different episode of a podcast about how he bought this and he sold it off at a gain, but he made 140%, but then he sold it off and he invested it in AMC at the time or something. And then it dropped, but I get to write off the losses. So it's not a big deal. That's not the way it works. There's a short-term capital gain now that he has to pay taxes on. And this is jargon on purpose, Ben. This is, again, what people just don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a short-term capital gain of, I'll make this up, $40,000. He then lost it all and now can only write off $3,000 of the loss. He's going to get a real surprise next April. I almost wanted to stop him, like standing by the marshmallows at Wegmans, and say, hey, man, listen, you're going to have a big tax bill. Be prepared. There's nothing you can do about it. So I should say there's nothing you can do. There's always something, yes. But you know what I mean?
So he has to pay taxes on his winnings and he can only write off a certain amount of his loss.
Yeah. And I run into that with short-term trading issues with people. And listen, this isn't common. That's not common at all. Our clients, we don't even do this stuff. I don't want to advise people on day trading stocks. That's not what we do. But you asked me for some mistakes, that kind of thing, changing your investments emotionally, if you stick to it and keep going. And I'll give you an example. This is a cool example. We have a gentleman who had $2 million when he was 62. So it was 8 years ago. He's 70 years old. He'll be 70 years old this year. he really didn't do anything. He continued to just max out. He's still working. Maximize the retirement contributions, get the company match, and he gets some stock options, not like hundreds of thousands, like $10,000 a year. His $2 million by time in, and obviously the market in the last 9 years, he now has $11 million. Like, that's just time in. So the hardest part, Ben, I know you've heard this, you read enough entrepreneurial stuff, you talk, you have several mentors out there, right, that are business owners. It's the hardest thing to do is to get the first $1 or $2 million. And it takes off after that. I'm telling you, if you had $2 million 5 years ago, Ben, and you're an aggressive younger investor, you've got 8 or 9 now. You almost couldn't screw up.
Right.
If you stuck to it. Yeah. If you moved it out when COVID hit or something else happened or the market dropped, you would have had a major issue. So stick to it. It's time in, it's systematic savings, it's being organized, and then making sure you're in the right type of account. Just, and that's why I keep bringing, I hate to keep saying this, but like certain financial advisors are out there pushing things that might not make sense. Just be aware of that. You got to be in the right type of stuff.
Yeah, it's I look at the graphs and I see it goes up and it goes down and it goes up and it goes down and it goes up and it goes up and it goes up and it goes down. And again, if you're not watching the video, I'm moving upward here. Yeah. I'm not going to lose it all. And to my understanding, with something like crypto, you could, in theory, lose it all. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is just my perception of it. Yeah. But if I show up to the casino, I've got $5,000 in my pocket, and I'd love to make money, but I understand what gambling is, and I know that I just might spend each and every one of that $5,000 and blow it by the end of the night, but I like the free drinks and I like to gamble, all the power to me. Crypto, to my perception, is very similar, that you're gambling on things that aren't necessarily backed, or there's not an understanding that it's going to go up long term. We don't really understand what's going on. It's emotional. There's just not enough data or understanding on it. Where if I go into crypto the same attitude as I did in the casino, all the power to me. But it seems like people are going into crypto with very little information. You know, Elon Musk tweets about it. We just look at a graph and we see that it's going to the moon, and we just assume that it's going to continue to the moon. And to me, that's almost gambling without knowing that ultimately the dealer usually wins. Does this analogy make sense? This is just me rambling, but I see this, and it seems like the slow and steady fixed amount each month, don't touch it route, it just seems like that's the smarter way to do things.
It could be, right? It goes back to, it depends on what you're going for.
Yeah.
I love hearing somebody that is intelligent about it. I wanted to let you keep going because I wanted to see what you had to say about it, but I think you're totally right. So I'll get into a couple of things here. I do know these off the top of my head, Ben. I have a weird memory for numbers, but episode 12, we had Peter Anderson on our podcast. He talks about the crypto stuff in detail, and I'm going to steal some of this from him. So if you listen to it, it's actually one of my favorite episodes. I could listen to that guy talk all day long. His entire job is to pick stocks. Wow. He is a professional stock picker, money manager. He runs funds, hundreds of millions of dollars. That's all he does all day long. And I asked him about crypto, and it was a great analogy. He basically said, it's the anti-Peter. There's no predictability. There's no backing. It's all the stuff that you just said, Ben, but even more at a more simple level, crypto is a currency, right? So, or it's trying to be a currency. How could Ben and Dave go get a cheeseburger right now with a Bitcoin? It's going to have to be some crazy national acceptance at a high level on a monetary thing or system or currency that 99.9% of people can't even understand where it comes from, how it's made. If you can explain all of that to me and then you want to invest in it, go ahead. With that said, Ben, a lot of our clients have crypto in their portfolios as a piece of it. So the reason is you always want to hedge the bets, right? The fear of missing out. It's going to go to the moon. Let's take some and go to the moon. just some though. So the slow, steady thing, typically what we do when you're investing is we want three buckets of money for most any investment. We want a short-term, very safe bucket earning 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, but it's not going to get crushed when the market goes down. And this will tie into something I said earlier. There's a middle bucket. So think of a bucket of money in there that might be shooting for 5 to 10%. It's a little more aggressive. And then we have a long-term bucket with stocks, maybe some crypto, some stuff that's for 10 years out. That bucket system has helped our clients psychologically and emotionally make it through down markets, because they know if in our short-term bucket, we have 3 to 5 years of savings for retirement specifically. How long did the COVID pandemic or the market drop? What was it, like 2 months?
Not long.
I mean, it came right back.
But if I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen, though. I would want security right now.
Totally agree, by the way, which we can get into in a minute. But the if you know you have 5 years of savings in a short-term bucket that isn't affected, how much better do you feel? No, like if the pandemic, especially at the beginning of it, we had no idea what to expect, right? Like it was the worst thing. No one had a clue. Everyone was afraid. But if that thing lasted 5 years at the level that they thought it was going to last at, we would all be in major, major trouble.
Right.
So 5 years is a great hedge, right? If you have 5 years of monthly savings in a bucket for retirement, you should be in good shape. And then we kind of spread it out amongst the other buckets. But what happened after that is that long-term bucket with crypto and other things, that returned 180%. So if you had $200,000 in that bucket, guess what? Here's the problem, Ben. Now people have way too much money in the long-term bucket versus the short-term, right? So because it's just taken off and grown out of control. You kind of just mentioned it. You'd want more safety and security. All we do is peel off the gains out of that long-term bucket and move it into the short-term bucket. Rebalance.
So you trim in. Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into, am I paying taxes if I'm trimming from the one bucket to put into the
Retirement account. Not in a retirement account, no.
Okay.
No, and we don't have to get into that. By the way, you have to be very aware of that, because yes, if you made 180% on an account and you're shifting it around, please be careful. I think a lot of people in this upcoming tax year are going to be shocked at what's coming on their tax statements that they have no idea. So I hope that's helpful.
It's tremendously helpful. I mean, this podcast has been way overdue, and we're going to do a second one. I want to close out with, we have been so much information here. Let's keep it lighthearted. Let's keep it fun. And you had mentioned how, you know, you do financial advice 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I assume that you take some breaks, and I'm just curious, David as a human, David as, you know, just a guy, what do you like to do, man? Watch the Bills, go hiking, sledding. What are you doing on your free time, man?
Yeah. So, well, I have two kids. I have an 8-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son.
Love it.
And here's my day, man. I'll just go through my day. I used to be the morning routine guy, right? I'd wake up, you work out, you journal, you do all the stuff you're supposed to do. You listen to an informational podcast, you're reading the right things, you get in the right mindset. Now with an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old, it's get up, pack lunches, make coffee, make breakfast, drive too fast to the office to get here for a podcast recording, and and then go home and do it all over again. Dad life. That's right. So, by the way, I love doing that. 15 years ago, I'd have been like, how does anybody even do that? Like, I can't imagine, but I do it and I love it. I love working out, I'm a big fan of physical fitness and balance and feeling good and energetic. Hopefully I'm not coming off as too energetic on this podcast or too little energy, but
you've got more energy in person, man, from when I've spent time with you.
You're going to scare people. But I love working out. I love pushing myself. And really, with that said, it seems like all the stuff I do, I get really into and intense about. But at night, honestly, the workouts, I love the Buffalo Bills. You're absolutely right. Sunday, love watching the Bills play. Love following the Buffalo Bills. I'm a huge fan of music. I know you are too, Ben. I love all sorts of music. Podcasts and music in my car are probably 50-50. Leaning more toward podcasts because I feel like there's so much information out there that I just want to know about. It's really awesome podcasts that have nothing to do with financial planning that are out there now. But kids stuff too. I coach my daughter's soccer team. There are things that take me, when I said 24/7 giving financial advice, there are very few things that take me out of that mindset. Coaching my daughter's soccer team is totally one of them. I love it. It's the cutest thing in the world trying to teach them soccer, and they're 8 years old and they have no idea what's happening. Again, working out, listening to music, hanging, just one-on-one time with my kids or my wife. I mean, it's funny to say this, but
you schedule it in.
You got to schedule it. Yeah. And I do a quarterly like dad day, you
quarterly
know, like
dad day. I like
tell
that.
My daughter to pick whatever she wants. I mean, within reason, and like you pick whatever you want and there's no electronics, right? Like I'm fully in, I'm not on my phone. I'm not checking my phone. She's not on any device that she might be able to use. It's like we pick an activity and we go do it. So all that kind of stuff. And hanging out with friends. I love hanging out with my friends. I'm not a golfer like most financial advisors. In fact, I might be known in Rochester as the worst golfer financial planner ever. But as my friend Peter said in that episode number 12, if your financial advisor is better than you at golf, you should be asking a lot of questions.
Interesting. Okay.
Think about it, right? They must be spending a lot of time out there.
I joke that part of why I started a podcast is because I'm bad at golf and I still wanted to have the intimate conversations with business people. So
there you go. Yeah, exactly. I'm with you.
I do want to like make that a hashtag though, quarterly dad day.
It's awesome. It was I wish I could remember. It was a podcast I listened to and it was all about being a good dad. And there's much more to it. But as you know, Ben, you can listen to a podcast. If you take one thing from each podcast you listen to, that's a win. That is the one thing I took from this podcast. This guy has so many things. He must be a way better dad than I am. But the one thing that I took from that was spend time, be present, quarterly dad day. And it's in the calendar. I send an invite to my wife. We know it's coming and that's what we do.
Yeah, I hope I took like 15 things from this podcast. I hope people at home took notes. You should let us know, ultimately message us, tell us what your one thing is. Is there one thing we missed? Like, is there anything that you believe is just a priority, like a foundational thing that everyone should take home from this podcast? Anything that's massive?
If I had to say one thing that if I were just the average listener out there, I would say this. I understand that financial planning can be overwhelming, boring. I don't even know where to begin. I don't want to start. It's one of those things. It's just pick something and start. If you haven't yet, and there's really, and I'll make this quick, Ben, there's a few reasons somebody wants to meet with a financial advisor. Something changed in their life. They got married, they got divorced, they bought a house, they want to retire. That might be one reason. Another reason might be, again, they're starting new. Or a third reason might be they think they have an advisor, but that advisor might not be doing anything for them. Or I never hear from my advisor. My first thing I would say is just take step number one, reach out to somebody. And I'm not saying it has to be us. I don't care who it is. Reach out to someone, schedule a time. It should be pretty painless and take the first steps to whatever financial freedom that you are looking for and balance. And any good advisor should be able to help you with that. Ben, I've often said as a second business, to answer your question, you don't know where to begin or how to answer mm-hmm. these 10 questions. I've thought about like just saying, hey, I'm going to volunteer my time and go sit with you on a financial advisor meeting. You pick one. I'll go with you and just sit there. And then I'll tell you when we leave if that person's a good fit for you or not as a consultant.
Yeah.
I know that would work. But anyway, that's it. Take the first step. Whatever it is, shoot it out an email. Shoot that text out. Ask your friend, who do they use? Doesn't matter. Send Ben a message. He'll get you in touch with us or our firm, whatever it takes.
And we're both short on time, but I'm not going to let you go without the rapid fire round because it's a ton of fun.
All right.
It's like Family Feud. We've got 30 seconds here to answer these questions, but it's okay. Like Whose Line Is It Anyway, that the points don't matter. The point value is based on what David likes. You can fill in the blank, a lot of either ors, but we'll get started with coffee or tea.
Coffee.
Beer or wine?
Beer.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Mornings or night owl?
Mornings.
Favorite season?
Fall.
Social media, man. Do you hang out anywhere? Where should we follow you?
LinkedIn, definitely. Everything we do goes on LinkedIn for me.
Everything's on LinkedIn. And yeah, so everything's on LinkedIn. How do we keep in touch, man? Long form, website, LinkedIn, your own personal page, phone call. How do I listen to podcasts? How do I get empowered? What do I do next?
So podcast is called Dear Rochester Retire Well. It's on every platform that you can think of. You can find that anywhere. Website is www.6pointfp, as in financialplanner.com. So 6pointfp.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can send me an email at dpulsini@6pointfp.com. And one of our guests said, Ben, if only everybody had a device in their pocket where they could Google David Pulsini and find him, that would be a wonderful thing. So you can find me anywhere.
And as you should know, everyone, in the show notes, you'll see that podcast link. You'll see the website. You'll see David's LinkedIn. Again, everything goes on LinkedIn, so it sounds like that's a great place to follow you. Dude, it's been fun, man. I always love spending time with you. Ton of energy. And we're going to have to do it again soon, dude, for sure.
I'm in, Ben. I love this stuff. I could do this all day. So I appreciate your time, Ben. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.